This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, June the 20th. I'm Angela Denning. Petersburg's Borough Assembly filled a vacant seat Monday by appointing a former mayor of the city of Petersburg. Jeff Mucci was appointed to the seat left vacant by Cindy Lagadakis when she took over the mayor's seat with Mark Jensen's resignation this spring. Mucci was sworn in by Borough Clerk Debbie Thompson during Monday's meeting.
Jeff, do you solemnly affirm that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Alaska and the ordinances of the Petersburg Borough, and that you will honestly, faithfully, and impartially perform the duties of assembly member for the Petersburg Borough, Alaska, to the best of your ability?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll have you sign it later.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right,
welcome.
Thank you.
Mucci was the mayor of the city of Petersburg from 1995 to 1999. He's a research diver with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The appointment was decided by anonymous ballot. Assembly members wrote down a name from among four people who remained interested in the seat. Former city councilor Paul Anderson, along with former assembly members John Hogue and John Haverlick, submitted their names for the seat. Also interested was another resident, Roger Sabine. Hogue ended up withdrawing from consideration. It took two rounds of balloting before Mucci had the four votes needed for appointment. The appointment is only until the October election. Petersburg's Borough Assembly will wait until next month to decide on a $500,000 remodel of the Petersburg Municipal Power and Light Building in downtown. Assembly members wanted to investigate other options for the electrical department. Joe Vicknicki reports.
The renovation project would replace the siding, insulation, doors, windows, stairs, and railings at the Power and Light headquarters, which dates back to the 1920s and 30s. Rainforest Contracting of Petersburg was the low bidder on the project and was recommended for the work by outgoing Power and Light Superintendent Joe Nelson. Rainforest bid $538,600 for the remodel. The other bids were from Alaska Commercial Contractors of Juneau and Dawson Construction of Bellingham. Assemblymember Bob Lynn wanted to find out about other options.
I've looked at the bids on this. We're over budget, but I also have some more questions about looking at some other options that aren't here, of moving that whole facility up to some other building and to do some of those things. And I haven't seen sufficient analysis for me to say to go for this bid right now.
The assembly has been considering the idea of putting the electric department under the oversight of a utility director and consolidating the roles of a few borough department heads as a cost-saving measure. Manager Steve Giesbrecht said staff had not put any thought into the possibility of moving the electrical department headquarters.
Other than the possibility of could it fit it at Public Works, and could we expand Public Works to have enough room up there? That came up as part of several different conversations, up to and including when the assembly took out the parking adjustment that that Joe had presented to fix the parking over here. So Public Works has a lot more parking room. That would be an option. I can tell you that we have not designed a project to do that at this point.
The borough has paid for design of the remodel of the downtown building, and that design work cost just under $61,000. The assembly a little over 4 months ago voted to move forward with the project. However, assembly members this spring also voted to remove $775,000 from the electrical department budget for purchasing land and improving the parking lot between the building and Hammer Slough. Combining the cost of the building remodel and the parking lot work, Assemblymember Kurt Wallhuter said the project price was closer to $1.3 million. Wallhuter wanted to find out more about moving the Power and Light headquarters in with the Public Works Department on 2nd Street.
And so what I was thinking was the more we can consolidate our manpower and our expenses, the less it's going to cost us as citizens. So this is an option that I think that we need to explore. I don't want to have an engineer's report. I don't want to send it out and have, you know, what would it look like for $1.3 million in new paint, maybe new office furniture, update the wiring. What do we, you know, what do we get? And something that I think we need to look at.
Local officials for years talked about moving the electrical department headquarters and generators from downtown to land in Scow Bay. However, cost estimates put that plan out of reach, and there's been little interest in making the move happen on the borough assembly in recent years. In May of 2015, the assembly okayed a design for just the remodel of the building. Assembly members agreed they needed some more information before they decided on the remodel bid award. Again, here's Wallheater.
Is there enough floor space? You know, I mean, if Carl says that, that it's possible, you know, so the same amount of floor space is available there that there is here. I mean, that's kind of, okay, we can kind of wrap our heads around that. Is there a place to park these vehicles that right now is having trouble going on and off Main Street, you know, and that kind of thing, you know, up there? You know, is there bays so that they can protect them? Those kind of things is the only kind of questions I need to have answered. I don't need to have soil samples or whether or not we got to, you know, mitigate or anything. You know what I mean? I mean, just kind of just basic so I have a little more information to be able to move forward with my decisions.
There's a 45-day deadline to award or reject the bids on the project. Power and Light employee Gary Morgan testified against the combination of department supervisors and the possibility of moving the electrical department offices to Public Works.
There's no positive gains for Power and Light, but it's a great way to spend another department savings on Public Works. The Power and Light Enterprise Fund is a new credit card with a bigger credit limit.
A motion to postpone the bid award until the July 3rd assembly meeting passed unanimously. Meanwhile, the assembly also had a brief discussion about the reorganization of department heads. The borough's motor pool foreman, Hoi Yi, wrote a letter in support of Public Works Director Carl Hagerman taking over that new role of utility director. Assembly members also voiced support for rewritten job descriptions for electrical superintendent and that new position of utility director who could have oversight of Power and Light. Superintendent Joe Nelson retires from the electric department at the end of this month. Borough Manager Giesbrecht told the assembly he has not started to find someone to fill that job.
Currently, the plan is, you know, that I'll have Power and Light reporting to me until such time that the assembly gives me direction. And, you know, we have not started any kind of recruitment process otherwise than that. So that's what we're moving forward with at this point.
The manager estimates recruiting and bringing in a new electrical superintendent to town could cost around $43,000. He has outlined the decisions he wants the assembly to make, including approving department head job descriptions, a salary range and relocation costs for a new electrical superintendent, and the status of the Power and Light building remodel. Several on the assembly sound interested in proceeding with the reorganization plan. Here's J. Stanton Greger.
Looking through this, it is my hope that Carl Hagerman actually shows interest in this position down the line. I think Carl is a very talented person and would be a good leader for that department. I want to make sure I said that clearly on the record before I leave for a month, as this will be a topic, and that I have the utmost confidence in him as a professional employee in this borough, and I hope he's willing to consider it, and I hope as the person doing the hiring, I hope you consider him for it again.
Hagerman initially expressed interest in the utility director job, but in May told the assembly he did not want the position if he didn't have their support. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
The project to reconstruct a salmon passage on Mitchell Creek won't be happening this summer after all. The U.S. Forest Service is postponing the project until next year. Mitchell Creek is on the Lindenberg Peninsula of Kuprinoff Island. The Forest Service built a salmon pass there about 25 years ago to help coho navigate around some falls. The idea behind it was to open up more habitat where coho can spawn. But recently, the Forest Service noticed that the passage was degrading. The creek project was supposed to be upgraded this summer, but now it's been rescheduled.
It will happen. It'll just be next summer.
That's Dave Zimmerman, the district ranger for the Petersburg Ranger District. He says a lot of things helped cause the delay, including deadlines that couldn't be met.
Continuing resolution, acquisition deadlines, trying to hit the barge to get stuff up from Seattle, things just didn't line up at the last, virtually the last couple of minutes. It just didn't work.
About 10 workers were scheduled to focus on the project this summer. Half a dozen of them ended up not being hired. Zimmerman says the others, including fish biologists on staff, are working on other projects.
We have plenty of work to do. So they're on doing project work on the district.
Reconstructing the Mitchell Creek Passage has to be done in the summer months because workers need lower water levels. If they wait until the rainy fall, it would be too late.
The water level is critical in the construction of that.
It's a unique project for the local Forest Service District because it focuses on coho, a species of salmon that is primarily harvested by sports fishermen. The Forest Service is expecting to start the project at the beginning of next summer. It's estimated to cost about $300,000. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. Wrangell's Municipal Employees Union has authorized a strike, but one of its leaders says members don't really want to. Mark Armstrong is a shop steward for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, which represents 24 city and borough staffers. He says the union voted to authorize a strike twice before this year. Both times, municipal officials responded by resuming contract talks. He says he hopes that happens again.
I don't know anybody who wants a strike. Certainly, you know, the community members don't want us to strike. I'm sure the city isn't looking forward to a strike, and neither are the union members. The purpose of the strike is just to bring the city back to the table so we can continue negotiations and hopefully reach a contract that's agreeable to everybody.
The Borough Assembly scheduled a special meeting at 5:30 this evening to consider the situation. Wrangell's unionized workers have been without a contract for 3 years. Management and labor made final wage offers earlier this month. The union proposed an across-the-board $2.50 an hour raise. The municipality offered 75 cents. Armstrong says the union's proposal balances out another contract term that calls for workers to pay 15% of their health insurance costs.
We're not seeking a wage increase. We're just trying to compensate wages enough so that in the end that we don't fall backwards because we're going to pay that insurance premium.
He says the borough's offer would essentially cut paychecks by several hundred dollars each. The municipality has been preparing for a strike. Interim borough manager Carol Rushmore says it's recruiting temporary fill-in staff. And she's released a list of services that would slow or stop if workers strike. She says some tasks would be covered by about 35 managers and non-union staffers. Armstrong says the union has not asked for a wage increase to be retroactive to when the previous contract expired.
We chose not to pursue that because of the extra burden that would have been on the city. We realize that things are extremely tight.
Rushmore, in a prepared statement, recognized the right of union workers to strike, but she said the municipality's responsibility is to build a budget it can afford, especially given ongoing state spending reductions. Cyclists were supposed to mark the 25th anniversary of the Kluane Chilkat International Bike Relay last weekend, but for the first time ever, the nearly 150-mile race from the Yukon to Haines was canceled when snow and slush compromised the safety of the course. Of the around 1,300 people registered for the race, 4 braved the highly unusual summer snowstorm to complete the entire race. And as KHNS's Abby Collins reports, they did it on one wheel.
Saturday morning, racers staying near the starting line in Haines Junction in the Yukon woke up to snow and slush covering the ground and roads in the middle of June. Chip Lendy is on the race's board.
It was funny, I woke up about 2 a.m. and it was, and after hearing the rain pouring down on the hotel roof all night, woke up at 2 a.m. and it was dead quiet, and I thought, oh good, the storm has passed and it's going to be beautiful.
But that wasn't the case. Lendy looked out the window to see a few inches of slush covering the ground. Lendy says it wasn't an easy decision for the board to make.
It was a very tough decision for the board. It's like having a wedding and you've done all this planning and then you have to cancel it. It was very discouraging for everybody.
But for safety reasons, it was clear it was the right call.
It was completely obvious that we had to cancel the race there. And it was all for safety issues. They're just both for driving, both for the participants, the biking, the volunteers that would have to be manning those stages in that horrendous weather. We just couldn't do it.
But along the highway heading back to Haines, a tire track in the snow on the side of the road indicated someone hadn't given up. A 4-person unicycle team decided to do the race anyway.
There were times when we're like, oh my gosh, what have we gotten ourselves into?
That's Ben Richardson at the finish line in Haines. He says eventually the snow and rain let up.
It broke. The weather broke for us. And I had my first little stint with some dry pavement, and that felt amazing. And we just kept on plugging away, you know?
The team UniQuest Yukon pedaled into Haines after around 13 hours alternating riders between the unicycle and a support car. Richardson, Ned Rosbicki, Nathan Hoover, and Jim Sowers left the starting line in Haines Junction a little early Saturday. At that point, they didn't know the race had been called off.
We found out the race was officially canceled at checkpoint 2.
That's Rosbicki. He says despite the cold and snow, they decided to keep going. Rosbicki points to Hoover and Sowers.
These guys are unicycle dignitaries, by the way. Okay. Nathan is one of the only people in the world who's pedaled on all seven continents.
And as far as we know, the first to do it.
Well, there were two of us.
And
but, yeah.
Jim has done epic trips around the world as well.
So this
and
was like nothing.
No, this was epic.
This was great. We never had such a wild.
There is no official unicycle category in the race. Rosbicki says after proving it can be done, they'd like to see one added next year.
Our humble request of the committee that runs this fine race is not that they send us all the prizes and ribbons, but rather just that they include a uni category in the future.
Lendy says that's something the board could consider.
Well, you know, this is a year first. We never thought we'd have to cancel a race, and I think we never, just like years and years ago, we never thought someone would be foolish enough to solo the whole thing. Now we realize that there are unicyclists that want to do it, so we'll have to discuss that.
Race coordinator Mike Kramer agrees. It's a discussion worth having. He says summer snow is not something organizers will worry about in the future.
I think we'll move forward with fair confidence that we shouldn't have to worry about snow every year for the bike, really.
Lendy and Kramer say they were not able to refund participants' entry fees, as everything was already paid for. Here's Lendy.
If we chose to refund the money, this would have probably been the last time we put on a race. It would financially cripple us that we couldn't do it next year.
As for whether next year will be a redo of the 25th anniversary race, that's something Kramer says is still under consideration. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
And I'm Angela Dunning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.